Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. Welcome, Jeff Potter, to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. I'm so delighted to have a fellow hospitality person and travel person with me. And Jeff has an amazing background, and we are excited to learn all about you and chat about compassionate leaders today. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Laurel. I'm excited to be with you. And, you know, compassionate leadership has certainly my mind come to the forefront as this country and the world has kind of navigated its way through the last year and a half. So it's been an interesting time, and it certainly lends well to having more compassionate feelings towards each other.
No, and I appreciate Jeff has been the CEO of Frontier Airlines and other companies. We're going to talk a little bit about his background and mostly about his current project, Manifest. And I so appreciate having these conversations with people in the travel and hospitality business, especially leaders that are employing people through this time. And hopefully as things come back, we'll come back roaring stronger than ever. I was in the hospitality field for full time for, you know, the time I was 14, the time I was 40. So the last 21 years I've moved into human development, but it's still near and dear to my heart. Where are you talking to me from today, Jeff?
Well, I'm in my home office, but I'm in Denver, in the suburbs of Denver, Colorado. So great, great place to be.
And Colorado is near and dear to my heart because I worked at the Brown Palace.
Oh, of course.
And the Hotel Sonnenalp in Vail. And the Hotel Jerome in Aspen. And,
oh my gosh.
One of the reasons Jeff and his team and I put together a program that we're going to talk about later, but one of the reasons I wanted to do it in Aspen is because it's been such an important part of my history. So we're excited about that. But Jeff, let's go back a little bit to your background and how you got into travel and hospitality. So where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? Tell us a little story about you.
Yeah, it's certainly professionally been somewhat of an unorthodox path, but I was raised in a military family. My dad's a retired military pilot. And so, you know, the goodness in that was we got to move all around the world. So I was actually born in France, and we lived in Arizona, Portland, Oregon, when he went to Vietnam, Okinawa, Edwards, California, and then outside of Spokane, Washington, which I really consider the Northwest home. But you know, what that provides you is some good and some bad, and not necessarily bad in my opinion, but finding roots was not something that was really important to me, until my wife and I had kids, and now we have grandkids. And so it's very important to be grounded. But I think on the positive side, it really helped me. I saw a lot of my friends that had the opposite impact, and that was, I'm very outgoing, always have been. As you'll learn today, I talk a lot, and I just enjoy life. But it really gave me a proper perspective on life in general and how lucky we are. Professionally, I was up outside Spokane and went to my first year at Washington State. My thought was always that I was going to follow my dad's footsteps into the military. My dad's a retired officer. My two sisters are retired colonels. My brother's a retired major. So I'm the only one that didn't end up going down that path. But it was, you know, with all the challenges in the military, so to speak, it was a comfortable direction. I was raised in that structure, et cetera. But I went to Washington State my first year, then I transferred to Eastern Washington, and I did join the military, similar to ROTC, but they dropped my program. So my junior year, they allowed me to get out. My junior year, I have to tell you, I was just lost. I didn't know what to do. I was working weekends during school. at the airport cleaning airplanes with a friend of mine. And then one day, this is with the old Frontier Airlines, one day the manager came in and said, "Hey, I don't know what you guys want to do in life, but we're hiring people in Oakland, California." And I was just 20, 21, and went home to my mom and dad and said I wanted to quit college and go work for $7 an hour. And so a friend of mine and I moved to Oakland, California. We became ticket agents, or at the time station agents. So we got a very diverse experience working the airport operations, that type of thing. So that was the start of a long, again, unorthodox career, but it taught me a lot. You know, when we talk about compassion, it taught me a lot in terms of knowing where I came from, both personally, but especially professionally. As later in my career, I ran a company like Frontier Airlines, and I always had this sense of sensibility and understanding of gate agents, people, luggage carriers, flight attendants. I was trained as a flight attendant during my career at one point. Thankfully, I never had to do it. Thankfully for the customers. So, but it certainly gave me an appreciation of, you know, with any company, we all kind of elect or found our way, and then we have different roles. And with that said, with most companies, regardless of your role, whether it's CEO or whether it's a pilot or flight attendant or ticket agent, they're equally as important. And as long as you understand that in any company, it allows you to have a very, very high level of compassion for what other people are going through.
Well, I love that story. I work with young people. I'm about to do, I did a pilot for an international company on career development. And I work with the seniors at the hospitality school at Denver. And so I love that. If you're confused, kids in college, you know, you can work your way up to CEO, right? If you work hard and you never know. Right. I think there's so much pressure on young people to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But working hard and following your heart is, you know, worked out for Jeff Potter. So it could work out for you too, the people that are listening.
That's right.
It's amazing. So did you also fly?
I was never a pilot. And you know, what's interesting about that, my middle son is an airline pilot, but it's only later in life when I saw him go through what he was going through that I started getting this interest. But, you know, I don't think, you know, I just don't think I have the makeup, because I have to tell you, I have such great admiration for pilots all over the world, because, you know, I always told pilots at Frontier they had the greatest job in the world when it was sunny, calm, beautiful sunsets, mornings, that type of thing. But when you're going through bad weather, windy, gusty, you know, I couldn't have any greater respect for what they do. And I always told them, I said, on one hand, you got the greatest job in the world. On the other hand, I can't pay you enough.
Well, you sound like you were a great boss there. And I appreciate this idea that everyone is, you know, a leader. I think as we move forward in the world and everyone has influence, this old model of leaders and followers is really going to go away, because in truth, everyone is a leader. And at an airline, those pilots are leaders, right? Every day.
They are. You know, on the day you're flying, you get on an airplane, you can care less who the CEO is. and I tell you, they stand up, and no pun intended, but they burn their wings. And again, I've just got no greater respect for them. And then, you know, on the flip side, you know, they don't necessarily have their hands on the controls, but, you know, the flight attendant role, especially today, is one of the hardest jobs I can imagine having. You know, again, during my Frontier days, I told our flight attendants, you have one of the hardest jobs in the world, because you're not allowed to have a bad day. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you get on an airplane and you're trying to, there's 150 people on there, you're not trying to meet the needs of 150 people. You're trying to meet the needs of 150 individuals. And as you know, we are so diverse in our thinking and our actions and our views that no one really cares if a flight attendant's having a bad day. So you kind of have to put that mask on it. So again, having the experience of being around them, understanding what they go through, you know, again, the word compassion comes up, and you've got to respect what they do, but you also have to have an appropriate understanding to have the right amount of compassion for what they go through.
Yeah, and I think all frontline workers have to have a big heart, but they also need to be fierce in keeping the rules, sure. You know, and
sure.
I feel like COVID has brought out the best in so many people and also the worst in many people. And we're seeing right. that. And, you know, it's not the CEO dealing with the customers on the flights that are cranky. It's the
that's right.
team, you know, and and it's, you know, that's true for hospital workers and all sorts of workers. But so you're out of the airline business now, yeah. but you're in the travel business. So I'm really curious, Jeff, about the creation story of Manifest. How did this whole thing come about? Sure.
Well, after I left Frontier, I joined a company called Exclusive Resorts. So I went from a commodity business to a very high-touch, high-end, exclusive club. It was a membership club. And when I joined, we had about 4,500 members, and we own 400 homes around the world. And it just opened my eyes to a whole different environment, what that high touch is. Because again, the airline business, as proud as I was of all the employees at Frontier, because when I started Frontier, we had 300 employees. When I left, we had 6,500.
Wow.
And to go through that process and growing together collectively was just such a great experience. And I was so proud of what they accomplished in terms of trying to differentiate ourselves. But at the end of the day, it's a very price-driven sector, a commodity. Exclusive Resorts was all about service and again, the white glove. But it opened me to a time when I joined the company. It was right during the economic downturn. And one of the things that we found was it was about the sixth or seventh year of its existence when I joined. And there was a seven-year itch. People felt the company was getting a little stale. So we started a program called Once in a Lifetime. And basically it was internationally focused and truly those once in a lifetime experiences, which, you know, we took people to the Galapagos, to Antarctica, seaborne cruises, African safaris. And so we were really responding to what our members or our customers said. And it grew from just a low single digit part of our business to a high teens of what our business was. So people gravitated to it. They wanted experiences. They wanted these off the beaten paths or something that, because it was part of our club offering, they knew that we had vetted it. And it was, again, a response to our members. At the same time, our members were asking for, well, we want to go on these 7-day trips, but we also want to go on these 3-4-day getaways. And so that seed of the idea resonated with me 10 years ago. Well, of course, it went on the back burner. There was a window of opportunity back then, but you know, I did some other things in between. I ended up running a small company out in California called Surf Air. And again, it was a club concept. It was more business oriented. So where what Manifest is doing, what a lot of travel and the leisure side is, it's all about discretionary income. You know, how do you, in many respects, improve your life? And so it kind of percolated for a while. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, I really started thinking seriously about it. And there's a lot of great niche players out there that do some of these getaways, but I recognize that no one did it on an inclusive basis. And So I went down that path, and then a couple years ago, got serious about it, started raising a little bit of money, finding some good people that where we could complement each other in our strengths and compensate for our weaknesses, of which I have many. And so we got going, and, you know, private aviation for the vast majority of Americans, in fact, all but the top half of 1%, is just aspirational. And it's not really a reality. So our goal is, knowing that we have to have private aviation as part of our offering, because if it's a 3-day weekend, we've got to get you there, we've got to get you back. So private aviation's got to be a part of it. Our goal is to find those efficiencies that allow us to expand the market on. So anyways, we recognizing private aviation had to be part of this, we're finding efficiencies that have already allowed us to drop the price 24 to 28% as part of the aviation cost, which is good, but we've got a ways to go. And so as we grow, I think we can get it to probably 40% lower. And what that does is opens up to people that want to experience travel, but also have the opportunity to fly private. And so right now we're talking to probably the top 3 to 5% in terms of household income. We want to get that to 8 to 10%.
Wonderful. So you have the most amazing trips. Everyone's is going to want to go on one. Can you just explain, take us inside one of your, you know, trips, maybe your favorite trip that you do?
There's so many, but I think what's important is we curate from A to Z, and we remind each other that because we're asset light, we don't own the airplanes, we don't own the lodging or the experiences. So we find good partners that allow us the flexibility to sometimes throw trips on the wall. I mean, we have a Thursday meeting every week, and we talk about different experiences that we're developing. And I can tell you many times I say, well, I would never do that. When someone will say, well, do you want us not to do this? I go, no. I wouldn't want to do it. Someone out there wants to do it. You know, I love the outdoors. So we haven't done a lot or developed many of them yet, but I think the cultural immersion type trips, we're working with a group near the Grand Canyon, a Native American group, that would be something that for me, number one, I would enjoy it. I'm very interested in Native American history. Number two, you know, the perfect trip at a very high level for our members, or what we can give to our members, is in 3 to 4 days, truly have one of those bucket list trips that you didn't think about. We put it out there and it resonates with somebody and they say, I never thought about that. That would be a great trip. And I'm very, very confident and a big believer that those can happen. Because all our in the U.S., because all our trips are domestic. Typically, they're within 2-2.5 hours of where you live, if not shorter, by plane. And so we are developing this trip, and it includes whitewater rafting, lodging, fly fishing. And what I mean by lodging is outdoor lodging. So those types of trips are the things that resonate with me. Glamping. So you're just digesting the outdoors. Some of the trips I probably won't participate in are some that, you know, we're developing, you know, trips to Napa, the Willamette Valley, up outside of Spokane, wine trips. That's stuff that actually has resonated very well with many, many people. It's just not something that I particularly be interested in. And by the way, I go to the Willamette Valley a lot with my mom because she loves to drink wine. And, you know, they have over 400 to 500 wineries up there. So I've been there a lot, but for me, it doesn't resonate as one of those aha moments. I look forward to doing some whitewater rafting. I love to cook. So we have culinary trips that I gravitate to. So our goal is to present enough diversity out there. And as I tell our team, throw things on the wall, spaghetti on the wall, something's not going to stick, but that's okay. Because again, we have negotiated the flexibility that 30 days prior, if it's not going, we can either reschedule it or we can drop it for the time being.
And manifest trips are really soup to nuts. People don't have to think about anything. They just pick a trip and and everything is taken care of, which is so lovely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the memberships work? Because you have an interesting model around the cities.
The membership is actually very, very simple. It's $2,500 a year, which when you look at our sector and you look at competitors type, and no one does exactly what we do, but when you're dealing with discretionary dollars, people have many options. And so when we look at it, we wanted the, from the model perspective, we wanted some skin in the game, so to speak. But that number is very, very low when you compare it to other options out there. What we've done in terms of modeling from a business perspective is once we get to 12 to 15 chapters opening, we're at six now, and we fulfill our requirements in each chapter of membership, we will end up paying for all our overhead and SG&A, and we become an entirely variable business, which is my goal. And so it pays, ends up paying for marketing, you know, my salary, everybody else's salary, and again, all our overhead. But as a member, the value proposition is simply you get access to our trips. They are exclusive to our members, and you get to take along up to three guests on each trip. And now they have to pay for the trip. Our trips, again, aren't for everybody. They're, I wouldn't say they're too pricey, but there is a price point that, again, is not for everybody.
And I imagine it's a great way to meet people too, because you're meeting like-minded people, whether it's going to the Grand Canyon and studying Native American history, or going to the wine country, or so that's amazing.
It's such a great point, and also an important point that is often overlooked, because the social aspects of what we do are hard to quantify. But I can tell you from my experience, not only with Exclusive Resorts, but with Surf Air, the social aspects are powerful. Ultimately, a club concept is going to really rely on referrals to grow. And for referrals, you need like-minded people, you need that social engagement. And ultimately, it's all about execution, like so many businesses. And what I mean by that is, for Laurel to tell a friend to join Manifest, we've had to treat you right, things that you appreciate and are willing to share. Because, you know, it's, in some respects, when you're talking with friends, has to do with your friendship, and it's something that we don't take lightly.
Well, I also think I think the future is bright, because I think people are starving for face-to-face contact and deeper relationships. So I think it's probably it's something to look at out there if you're looking for deeper, meaningful interactions with people.
Right, right. I agree. And you know, it's interesting, and believe me, no one had this insight to the future, but you know, we were to launch last year, and obviously we had to postpone. But again, what our value proposition is: domestic travel, private air, private terminals, small groups, and traveling with like-minded people. And so we haven't had to do a pandemic pivot. We've had to take an increased focus on health and safety. But in terms of the offering, we really haven't had to do a pivot.
Which is a blessing. And you're still here and your future is bright. So that's interesting. In truth, your company didn't have to pivot, but it had to pause. And I imagine there's benefits to pausing.
Well, there's benefits to pausing that allowed us to take a step back. And again, it wasn't any vision that we had post-pandemic. We were lucky that we fell into this category that really didn't require the pivot. But we got to focus on experiences. We got to focus on technology. We actually rebranded the company and brought out a new website. So, you know, it gives you time to reflect, kind of dot the I's, cross the T's. I wouldn't say we started with a clean sheet of paper, but you know, it allowed us to think through the strategy. And these were very open conversations. It goes not necessarily a compassionate leadership, but you know, my leadership style is one such that, you know, everybody has a voice. There is no, these are cliches, but there is no thing such as a bad idea. As long as everybody, you know, checks the ego at the door and understands that it may be a good idea, but we may not be able to take it forward. And it's not about the idea. It's just about collectively trying to figure out where we want to go, what we want to accomplish. And at the end of the day, you want to have a team around you or a team or be part of a team that they understand once the decision's made, we're all rowing in the same direction.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So although you're not the CEO of a large airline at the moment, as a compassionate leader, what advice would you give to leaders in the travel business right now or in the airline business?
Well, first of all, I know most of the folks in the airline business that have had to find their way through this. And I have to tell you, I don't think they could have done a better job. I am just amazed at how they've navigated through this. I would tell you the one thing that stood out, bar none, is their communication, both to customers, but also to their employees, their recommitment to their employees, whether it's United, Delta, Alaska, you know, these are companies that these leaders, it really kind of pushed them to the forefront of knowing that, you know, if you're an aircraft cleaner, you know, obviously there's a couple things you always want to know. And I used to try to do this in business is if you're in accounting, you kind of want to know what you do impacts the company, good and bad. And so the way you do that is through transparency. You share as much as you can. Frontier was a public company, so my hands were tied to a certain extent, but I would tell you that we were very, very open with our employees for a public company. But I was just amazed at how well they navigated through this. But so I think they've done a good job. I think it's a reset for the businesses themselves. I think for the consumer, we will see higher prices for the time. The domestic sector has rebounded very, very well. And I think with few, if any, probably no exceptions of what I follow, all the airlines are back to making money in the third or fourth quarter. So anyway, I think they've done a great job, but I think with any company, even the hospitality, you know, hotels, you think you've got that background, Laurel, and, you know, it ultimately boils down to safety for your customers, but especially your employees.
Yeah.
And, you know, I helped navigate Frontier post 9/11. I ran Exclusive, but I was still on the board of Frontier when we went through the financial crisis. And to put it in perspective, I don't know what the number is, but I can tell you it's 10X, 20X, 50X harder now in terms of keeping a business going and how to try to steer yourself towards the future. But as you think through that as a leader, you're sharing that. And I think as long as they do that, they, you know, keep people engaged. You know, there's been a lot of layoffs. Hopefully they're bringing those. I think they are bringing people back. And so, you know, it's something that obviously we've never seen before. And hopefully you don't see it again. But I think we'll be better leaders for it.
Yeah. I think no one's taking any of their employees for granted right now. I live in a resort town and it's a hard fight to get restaurant employees, hotel employees, transportation employees. My hope for the industry is that we slow down enough to value as an industry, value our people and pay them better. And, I think we're going to have to do that. And it's also the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I might say, I think you know, what restaurants are a very thin margin business, like the airlines. But at some point, it's a leader's got to focus on that line between, am I competing on, like, do I have a commodity mindset versus am I trying to apply the value concept? And I would tell you, during my tenure at Frontier, we were not the lowest cost airline. But we did well because we were successful, especially in Colorado. We were very fortunate to have great support from Colorado, the Colorado community in general. They really embraced us as a hometown company. And we saw it. We saw it in the fairs. We saw it. So we knew that while I'm a firm believer the customer isn't always right, I am a big believer that if you take care of the employees, they take care of our guests. And ultimately, whether it be profitability or the stock price, it will follow along.
Our last podcast, I interviewed a friend of mine who's a restaurateur out here that ended up not losing any employees, closed his restaurant down for a week and rejiggered how he did business and kept everyone employed. And he's one of the few people out here not looking for employees because he kept his employees happy throughout the process. So there's something I really want to echo, you know, treat your employees well, they'll treat your customers well. I love that.
They will indeed.
Wonderful. Well, we have a partnership that we're brewing up together, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I want to go to Aspen. So tell us about your shift in your corporate memberships.
Well, you know, it's interesting for us that, yeah, we started out this being an individual membership. But again, and this came up during the year of the pandemic, I mean, 2020, where we started thinking about where can we additionally offer services that we would view as useful, needed, desired. And so I talked to three local Colorado companies, large, and talked to them about, you know, corporate memberships, because again, when we focus on our employees, what can we offer them? Well, we can offer them training and we can offer them getaways for work well done, those types of things. So there's just this whole area that we hadn't even really thought about or given time to. And so as we did that, and as we started venturing down this path, is what are one of those things that you look at leadership, and we, at least in my case, and I think in your case, we know is a required trait or strength that leaders should have, and that is compassion. And so we're working together to put trips together for companies that understand the importance of compassionate leadership, which I believe has to do with, you know, some level of humility from the top down. And I heard a great quote, by the way, and it's from a gentleman that you probably heard about. His name is Tim Tebow. And this was just a couple days ago. I don't know when he gave the speech, but I saw the speech. And he talked about humility, and he said, humility is not thinking less of yourself. Humility is thinking less about yourself. And in that context, I think that comes into compassionate leadership. And I can tell you, I've been very blessed in my career. I've had a lot of bosses. But, you know, time's a commodity, but I always, always had a mentor figure over my shoulder. I was so blessed. But have I had some poor bosses? Yeah. And this day, I believe that there's a general trend and there's just this flow of compassion leadership that really transcends just business. It just transcends human nature, and people need to start understanding. We've kind of lost our way a little bit in some areas. But I think for the most part, we all yearn for that increased understanding and compassion for each other. Companies, they get it, because as we talk about industries that do lose employees, they more times than not will understand that this is the type of leadership traits that if they don't know, they need to learn, they need to be exposed to. So that's something that we're very, very excited about.
Yeah, and we're excited about working with you. I think a lot of leadership teams are coming back together. They're a little worn out, and the manifest experience that we're doing is about Compassionate Leaders Executive Camp. Yeah. And the first trip we've put out there is to Aspen, and it involves outdoor activities and reflective activities and team building activities. And it's just, and also to remind people to take care of themselves. I think the leaders that have been doing a great job that I've been talking to are also a little worn out. So it's a way to, you know, realign with your team and also be self-compassionate and take care of yourself and come back to work.
I think that's so, so important. I, you know, for me, I am a person that thrives in truly the social interaction. Of all the good things in video conferencing, it doesn't solve for all the above. And so it's been challenging for me. And so mentally, you know, leaders have to, again, in my case, find ways to ensure that mentally I'm still on top of it. But, you know, for, we have a very small employee group, and we have one in Calgary, we have one in South Dakota. The rest of us are here in Denver, but we have some offshore folks, and staying in contact, even via Zoom, and the conversation doesn't surround work, but when I call, in fact, I'm doing another one this afternoon, just tell me how you're doing. Tell me what's going on. Not work related, but how's life, you know? And I think that outreach is so, so critical, because, by the way, selfishly, it helps me, but it also helps the other person to try as best we can to retain that connection.
Well, I know that although we try to separate it, life and work is one big soup. And
it is. Well, it is. And I'm so blessed, you know, because I'm during a time of my life that I could have slowed down, and I chose a different path, but I'm very, very lucky. Can you think of a more exciting, you know, travel and tourism is just so exciting. And, yeah. You know, it's like the airlines. When I got into it and I got into exclusive resorts and everything, I've been very, very fortunate in that it's easy for me to be passionate about. And so I am. So it's kind of like my hobby. I'll go to work, or I'll work from home, and I'll put in a full day. But, you know, again, I can't remember the cliche, but, you know, something along the lines, if you find your passion, it's really not work.
It's not work. And, yeah, I think we share that. We found out we were the same age, and instead of retiring, we're starting new companies and new adventures.
You bet. Oh, I got so much to do yet.
Yeah, I have so much to do. I believe in reincarnation, so I don't have to do it all in this lifetime. Thank goodness.
Well, I agree with you. I think I'm a believer in reincarnation. I'm just worried what I'll be reincarnated to, and what exactly I'll have the flexibility to do.
Well, it's really all a mystery, so we just better have a great time while we're here, right?
That's absolutely right.
Jeff, it's been so nice to get to know you through this podcast. Tell us how our listeners can learn more about you and your services.
Sure. The easiest way, of course, is go to our website, and it is www.manifestescapes.com. And listen, for your listeners, if they want to reach out to me directly, I'm pretty good. I try to do that 24-hour rule and get back to everybody. It's getting tougher and tougher these days, but I'll do my best. But they can always email me as well. And if you go to our site, you'll find a team, and on there you'll find my email. But just in case, it's jpotter@manifestescapes.com. the initial day bought it.
Wonderful. And you can look at their corporate services and our partnership so that we can organize your retreat, your executive compassionate leaders wonderful. Circle retreat. Thank you, Jeff.
My pleasure. It's been a lot of fun, Laurel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.